Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. We are off and running on a brand new week. It is Monday, June 10th, 2024. Our radio program now, well, we're in our 14th year, 13 and a half years now on the radio after 22 years on the TV here in town. We're coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media, growing Bustos Media presence here in Tucson. Five radio stations now under one roof. This one is 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts. Pretty much 99% of every show we have done over the past almost 13 and a half years on my website, buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our Monday one-on-one, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, and hanging services and hanging systems. In other words, Moe makes house calls. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and at moesgallery.com. Well, what's it like to work every day at the White House, and what's it like to travel with the president all over the world on Air Force One? Our Monday one-on-one guest is Voice of America national correspondent Steve Herman, who takes readers behind the White House curtain, which is the title of his just-released new book. Steve Herman has more than a quarter of a century reporting for the Voice of America from Asia before serving as senior White House correspondent during all 4 years of the Trump presidency and at the start of the President Biden term. Started in 1942, the Voice of America is the international broadcaster of the United States and reaches a staggering 326 million adults per week across its many platforms. Steve Herman's early story is personal to me, as I had the good sense to hire him 50 years ago when I was building a newsroom at the NBC radio affiliate in Las Vegas. Welcome back to the program, Steve. How are you?
Bill, great to be with you on this afternoon.
We are back together again after all these years. Why don't we get to the crux of this? What was it like reporting every day on Donald Trump, a.k.a. Captain Chaos?
Well, as a White House correspondent, what you want to be able to do as often as possible is be in proximity to the president, see him, hear him, and ask questions of him. And in that regard, Donald Trump was a cornucopia. He was probably, compared to any other president, the most accessible in terms of speaking to reporters on the record in total minutes. I don't think there's any other president who would even come close. So that was a great experience. What obviously was also unprecedented was the, as you mentioned, the chaos that occurred, where, you know, every day the White House communications staff has sort of a script of what they want the president to say and how the day will be lined up as far as his interactions with journalists. And Donald Trump obviously did not stick to the script.
Well, you told an interviewer last week at the National Press Club, the official book launch, that you personally thrived on the chaos of covering the president. After all, you were working 18-hour days on many occasions, certainly weekends, and traveling all over the world with the president. How did you ever get into that routine, or was it ever routine, Steve Herman?
Well, Bill, I don't know if it ever got to be routine. Anything you're dealing with at the White House or with the president, I don't think you can call it routine. But it got, in a sense, more predictable, although, as I just emphasized, a lot of things about the Trump White House were unpredictable. And I had a lot of experience overseas for many, many years, covering all sorts of things, mayhem, disasters, wars, and some heads of government. So I wasn't totally unprepared for it. In the previous 8 months to me going over to the White House, I had been covering the State Department, traveling with Secretary of State John Kerry at the end of the Obama administration, and then one trip with Rex Tillerson in the Trump administration, and then I moved over to the White House.
Do you think President Trump, Steve, ever fully understood the role and mission of the Voice of America? After all, you were the conduit between President Trump and tens of millions of people around the world who were listening to your reports. You were portraying America to these people.
Yeah, it's a great question, Bill, and a lot of people have misconceptions about what the Voice of America is and is not. It is 100% funded by the U.S. government. U.S. citizens, taxpayers are stakeholders in VOA, but they are not the audience. It is an external broadcaster of the United States. And we have a mission to tell America's story, all sides of America's story. And it is not the voice of any one particular administration. We have a charter that was made a law during the Gerald Ford administration, which says that VOA must be objective and unbiased. And that also means reporting on things that happen at the White House or in an administration that the White House may not want spread around the world. So in the Trump administration wasn't the first administration where there was a misperception of what VOA should be doing and reporting. But it definitely turned out, I would say, to be the time when that firewall between the newsroom and officials of an administration, that firewall got breached, scorched a little bit, I would say.
The president was critical at times of VOA, calling it at one point the voice of China.
Yeah, again, you have to understand the context of why these things were said. At that particular point, the White House and the president were trying to put pressure on members of the Senate from both parties to bring up for a confirmation hearing the nominee to run the parent agency of the VOA. And I'm convinced that they really couldn't find anything legitimate to criticize about VOA's reporting. So they went after some, sort of things that were silly, like VOA had put online a piece of video that actually came from the Associated Press of something happening in China related to COVID, sort of celebration that was going on in China, and that somehow got turned into Chinese propaganda.
We're speaking with Steve Herman. Steve's new book, Behind the White House Curtain, a senior journalist story of covering the president and why it matters. This book is a lot more. First of all, I very much enjoyed the book, Steve, and you were very generous in your mentions of me in the book. Very much appreciate that.
Well,
go ahead.
You're a part of how I got to the White House, Bill.
Yep.
I was very, very fortunate. My first real newsroom out of school, although I was still in school at the time, what was to work under you at KORK Radio in Las Vegas. And I was very fortunate to have, someone with the ethics, the journalistic ethics, as you have, to take me under your wing.
And it was a very serendipitous time, as you know, Steve, for us to be working at the NBC affiliate in Las Vegas. After all, many people may not realize it, but there was an all-news, I think the first all-news radio network that NBC put on, called News and Information right. Service in 1975. Didn't last very long, maybe a couple of years. I think it ended in maybe mid-year 1977. But the Beast needed lots of material. It was 24/7. And we were more than happy, Steve Herman, weren't we, to comply with feeding a lot of stories out of Las Vegas. I think one year we probably were in the top five of stories on the network out of Las Vegas.
Well, Bill, you taught me the concept of, I don't know if you came up with this moniker or not, dialing for dollars, where we could supplement our meager radio broadcasting incomes by sending these stories to the various radio networks and audio clips. It wasn't much money that you made individually. I think some of these paid as little as $10 or $20. But if you added them all up over the course of a year, it could add up to something. And it was excellent training for me to, you know, basically as a teenager, to have to come up to network standards, so to speak. And most of the time they took our material. But I think you really pioneered that in Las Vegas.
All right. We'll pick up a little more on Las Vegas and also about why you actually wrote this book. This wasn't all about a book about Trump. It's so much more than that. Steve Herman, stay with us. Steve Herman is our Monday one-on-one, the one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. More with Steve Herman, who is currently the Voice of America national correspondent. He joins us again for part two, segment two, right after this break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It is the Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen. And Monsoon Chocolate is opened there in that center by Moe. Moe's website looking really good. They revamped it, moesgallery.com. So check that out. Our Monday one-on-one guest, Steve Herman, is with us, Voice of America, national correspondent. He has written a book. It's just been released. It's titled Behind the White House Curtain, a senior journalist's story of covering the president and why it matters. Steve covered all 4 years of the Trump administration and a little bit of the start of the Biden administration, and took a ton of trips on Air Force One. Gee, Steve, it's too bad there isn't a frequent flyer program for Air Force One, because you would be certainly entitled to all sorts of free trips. So what was it like flying on Air Force One?
Well, it's very unique. One thing that would often happen is the president would speak on the tarmac. And so my job was to get the audio of that to the other radio networks as quickly as possible, trying to upload it via Wi-Fi or cell phone, via cloud server. And I'm standing on up the top of the back steps while the engines are revving up and we're about to take off, and the flight attendant's trying to get me inside the plane, and I'm still trying to complete the file upload, because on the smaller Air Force Ones, that fuselage is a Faraday shield. You can't get any signals out of it on your cell phone. And sometimes on the larger, the 747 modification planes, or two of the big ones, I would be on my laptop and typing away or filing something as we're taking off or landing. And because until you got to about 10,000 feet, you still had some connectivity. So it was very stressful. One thing I should point out, Bill, is we do not fly free on Air Force One. The taxpayers are not paying for the journalists to be on the plane, the press pool. Those seats are billed to our news organizations, who have to pay. And we're in those seats representing other news organizations. There's a television pool. So if the pool is from Fox News or CNN or CBS, they have to share their material as quickly as possible with all the other TV networks. So I was the radio pool reporter for a lot of these trips, including the international trips. And, the seats, I know you are a Century Club member, having traveled to more than 100 countries. Mm-hmm. The seats are sort of the old economy class seats. They don't really go back all the way. You've got a little bit better pitch and width than you would have in those economy class seats these days, but they're not quite business class seats either. So one of the challenges when we were traveling overseas, a lot of, you have the fuel stop, so it can be 18 hours almost to get somewhere. The president does have his own bed on the plane in his own little cabin, and we try to get a little bit of shut-eye. But with Donald Trump, he could come back at any time and talk to us on the record, so I couldn't take like some sleeping pill to knock myself out. So we would land, and it would be morning time in Asia. So we had an 18-hour day ahead of us after, trying to get a cat nap during the 18 hours in flight. And so some of those days were way, way beyond 24-hour days, let's put it that way. It was not a lot of fun. It's always a thrill to fly on Air Force One, but if you're working on the plane, it's not fun. And by the way, there was something in the news a few months ago about reporters that had been flinching dinnerware off the plane.
Mm.
I never took anything that wasn't disposable. I have some Tabasco sauce, little plastic bottles with the Air Force presidential logo on it, and some napkins. But I did not stuff any china or forks and knives into my backpack.
You know, I want to point out to our listeners, this is so much more than a book about the covering the Trump presidency. You did some incredible, very meticulous research going all the way back to the first president, George Washington, and how how these presidents have been covered. And I learned so much from your book, Behind the White House Curtain. I didn't realize that the Lincoln, there was a kind of a January 6th type incident with President Lincoln.
They were trying to thwart the inauguration of Abraham Lincoln, and he had to travel clandestinely part of the route to get to D.C. on a train. And there were very strong concerns about some sort of activity. Well, this was, of course, on the eve of the Civil War, that would disrupt Lincoln from taking the oath of office. So some things are not new. And then I also, you mentioned George Washington. He was called a traitor by some of the press in Virginia. They called him a traitor. Senile, you know, things like that, you know, out of touch. And I think that's why he didn't run for a third term, setting, you know, that precedent that lasted until Franklin Roosevelt, and was sort of fed up with his press coverage. And as I also recount in the book, a lot of presidents could give it back as much as they took it, and had very firm rules in dealing with the press. And we're very fortunate, Bill, in this modern era to have remarks from the president live on the air, press conferences that are carried live. A lot of interchanges for most of history between presidents and reporters was off the record. It couldn't be used.
Yeah.
Or it was on background, as we call it, where you could say someone familiar with the president's thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
and what would happen if you violated those rules? You would be cast out of the White House. Some of these presidents, like Teddy Roosevelt, who enjoyed the interaction with the media, but they were definitely in control of the process.
All right, you tell a story, and I want you to kind of have to telescope this because of the time, but one thing that was, it's a funny story. It happened in Las Vegas, and at KORK, NBC in Las Vegas, as you know, Steve, mm-hmm. and you write about this in the book, we would carry the live countdown of underground nuclear tests, because we would feel in Las Vegas the aftershocks of those tests. And so we were carrying it live, and you pick up the story from there, Steve.
Right. So it was important for these tests to be carried live so that people that might be in precarious positions on building would know that there was going to be a bit of an earthquake. So on this one particular instance, you know, they were sort of routine. I think it was 8 o'clock in the morning. We would interrupt regular programming. This one was on May 10th, 1998, if I remember correctly. 78. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Thank you for correcting mm-hmm. me. The Energy Department spokesperson did the countdown and described a scenario where there was shaking and, you know, could see a puff of dirt going up, that everything was sort of normal. And so you had found this fellow, maitre d', at the top of the dune on the Las Vegas Strip, who would always have a sort of very emotional reaction
yes.
To these nuclear tests going off. And you would send that tape around the world to all the radio networks because he was so colorful, this maitre d'. August Nogar was his name, by the way, the maitre d'. And But we called him up that morning, and he said he didn't feel anything. And so that led us to do a little bit of investigative reporting that the bomb was a dud, the underground nuclear test at the Nevada test site. And that the basically it was fake news.
It was
what the spokesman at the Energy Department had said about shaking and seeing the dust cloud go up. And that became a big national story out of your newsroom, and a significant embarrassment for the U.S. Department of Energy.
Yeah, Auguste, the maitre d' would characteristically say, "Oh, I feel so nauseous. Oh, the shaking
yeah.
has made me just so sick." Well, this time he said, "No, what happened?" He said, "I didn't feel anything."
Well, right. You made him into an international celebrity. I think people from all around the world would come in to meet this maitre d' that they had heard in hysterics on the radio.
Oh, my gosh. We had a lot of fun, Steve Herman.
Yes,
all right. The book is Behind the White House Curtain, a senior journalist story covering the president and why it matters. The author, Steve Herman, who is the Voice of America national correspondent. Steve, the usual place is Amazon for the book and everywhere else, I guess.
Yes, I've heard some people are finding it in the bricks and mortar stores. So, yeah, if you can't find it in your local bookstore, you can certainly order from your favorite online bookstore.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to my friend Steve Herman, the national correspondent for the Voice of America, talking about his new book covering President Trump's 4 years in office as White House correspondent. Great to talk with Steve again on our Monday one-on-one. The Green Things folks, they do such a great job. I have so many friends that go over to Green Things, and I don't blame them. I go there, 3384 East River Road, for all of their plants. 13-acre site, everything you can imagine. If you want some beautiful color for your summer gardening that will survive the heat, they can point you, not only point you in the right direction, they'll take you to those particular plants. GreenThingsAZ.com. Their sister business is ZocaloVillage.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now to Washington and our Washington and Governmental Affairs contributor Terry Bracey, who is also a contributing columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Terry has had a unique role in representing Tucson. And beginning with a 10-year stint on the staff of famed Congressman Morris K. Udall, Terry was then appointed to sub-cabinet position by President Carter, subsequently served under four presidents of both parties. He's the founding partner of a respected public affairs firm, Bracey Tucker Brown, which has worked on many of Tucson's successes in the nation's capital. Terry, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing just fine. We have another lovely day here in Washington, but next week we're going to get 100 degrees.
So, oh.
You know, time to get out there on the golf course this week.
Oh, my goodness. That's what I plan. 100 degrees and the humidity. Oh, boy. That's not going to be fun.
No, it's going to be a little bit of an uncomfortable week, but we can live with it.
There you go.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much, Terry. What was the reaction to the Trump verdict, pretty much as you would expect?
I think it was pretty much expected. I mean, the facts were there, and, you know, many people on the Republican side didn't approve of an indictment like that. They thought that's part of his personal life and so on. But he was found guilty by a jury, 12 regular human beings, three or four of whom voted for Trump, according to the stories afterwards. So I think he got a fair trial, and I think he probably is going to get a fair result from a judge. He better watch it. He's starting to badmouth the judge again. And, you know, in American jurisprudence, you just don't do that. But then when has Donald Trump ever, you know, paid attention to what we do in American jurisprudence?
I wonder how the pre-sentencing hearing went today. Oh, boy.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Well, at least they allowed him to do it virtually, which, you know, I mean, it didn't have to go into that building and through the jail cells and all the things that most felons have to do.
Terry.
So he got a break on that. Yeah.
Terry, I want to get your take on this poll that suggests that Generation Z, those are the young people born between 1997 and 2012, have become very sour on public institutions and existing power structures and even the country itself. What are some of your thoughts on that?
Well, Bill, politics during this era has become poisonous. It's really vicious. Turn on the television. It creates hate and it divides people. It makes you bitter. So I can understand why young people who haven't seen better times would think this is the way it always is. You know, in our generation, we had Jack Kennedy, we had Bobby Kennedy. Republicans had people like Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, people you could look up to and who really loved the nation and led well. But in this era, unfortunately, because politics has gotten out of control in various ways, but mostly because money has taken over the game completely, it's given us a different kind of politician. And so many of them are just transactional people who are there for a little while. Somebody told me the other day that he talked to a member of Congress who said he ran for Congress so he could get a job as a lobbyist. That's how bad it's gotten.
Oh, gosh.
So you see these young people, they're quite deep. I mean, if you talk to them, they're very thoughtful, but they're very disappointed. And that's on us, Bill. That's our generation. We let this happen. And it's going to take a long time to fix it. And Lord help that Donald Trump get in with his idea of Christian nationalism, and it could really be a rocky time.
Understand you're going to be writing in the Arizona Daily Star. The piece will appear next Sunday about the return of the morality police. What's that all about? What are you thinking?
Well, my master's thesis at the University of Arizona was on birth control and public policy in the United States, and it was on a famous Supreme Court case called Griswold versus Connecticut, where the plaintiff, Estelle Griswold, managed to finally get the Supreme Court to get the government out of our bedrooms. Up until that time, in the state of Connecticut, you could not buy any contraceptive device. We're not talking about abortion now. We're talking about contraception. And as a result, this opened the door, and years down the road, the last 60 years opened up many rights for people, including gay rights, same-sex marriage, and a more personalized view of our sexual and personal lives. Well, along comes the MAGA crowd, and here they are, and they have tied themselves to something called the personhood movement. Not only do they define abortion as murder, but they're against all forms of contraception, which they now consider to be abortion. Therefore, contraception is abortion, according to these people, and they are writing the platform for Donald Trump. Very dangerous.
Wow.
Very dangerous. And I don't think people realize this, Bill. That's why I'm writing about it. I don't think that young married couples and whatnot want to be told whether they can plan their families or not. But that's what's coming.
Is this being, do you think, written into the platform?
I think it, to the extent that they have a platform, it is part of what's coming. There was a big article in the Washington Post about it this morning, a big column. Absolutely. This is what they're up to. They're going to Christianize the nation. And you see this, but, Bill, you could see this developing in states like Texas and Florida. In Florida, for example, Governor DeSantis doesn't allow people to say gay in his government. He can't say the word gay. And his interpretation of history is one which doesn't recognize that slavery was all bad. DeSantis, the way he wants civics taught, slavery had good things about it. And then over in Texas, Abbott is running Texas like a king. You know, he just, the abortion, there's no abortion in Texas. And they're going after reproductive rights and contraception. So this is an early warning. And that's why I'm writing in the Star this weekend.
And, of course, women's right to choose will be on the ballot in a lot of states. You think it could have a big, big influence, you think, on the outcome of the presidential race?
I think it could determine the race, but I think that the public has to become aware of what's going on here. I think I have many Republican friends. Many people in my family have been Republicans, are Republicans. But even they don't really understand what these people are up to. And I think if the word gets out at how extreme these people are, you know, I think it'll have a big effect on the election. Otherwise, we could be headed for a real disaster.
All right, Terry Bracey, we will look for that column in the Sunday Arizona Daily Star. Terry, thank you. I hope you have a very good week.
You too, Bill. Good to talk to you always.
Always. Terry Bracey with us on the live line from Washington. All right, we'll take a break right here. Dr. Mark Sykes is coming up from the Planetary Science Institute.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Pima Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's metropolitan planning organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's going to be a very hot week. Excessive heat warning is coming up here in a couple of days, so that will be our second excessive heat warning in the last week or so here in Tucson. The summer furnace is kicking in Tucson, Arizona, but the good news is about a three-hour drive east of here, you can be in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, where the elevation is 5,000 to 7,000 feet. Just a delightful place to spend a summer day. It's going to be cooler over in Silver City, and usually we like to say 10 degrees cooler. Look at that, low 80s. Today's high, upper, 87 in Silver City. That's delightful. Nights, 56 degrees. So it's worth the drive to a beautiful area of the southwestern portion of the Land of Enchantment in New Mexico. Their website, and I hope you'll check it out before you take the drive, southwestnewmexico.org. A lot going on over there in the summer. Just a great getaway. All right, let's go now on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our friend Dr. Mark Sykes, who is the CEO and director of the Planetary Science Institute, which is based here in Tucson, been around for more than 50 years as a nonprofit engaged in the exploration of the solar system. Dr. Sykes, how are you today?
Oh, great, Bill. It's good to be here.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. Seems like so much publicity is centered recently on the Boeing CST-100 Starliner spacecraft, which docked with the International Space Station on its first crewed mission. That was on June 6th. Not crewed, C-R-U-D-E, but like a crew. And they had some problems. They've worked through them. But anyway, that's what has been getting all the headlines in the space arena, which is a shame because there's been an amazing mission that China has carried out. Why don't we talk a little bit about that, Mark Sykes?
Yeah, the China missions aren't given a whole lot of coverage, but they're doing some pretty spectacular things. In this case, on the 1st of June, they landed the first nation to land on the far side of the moon.
Wow!
So on the other side of the moon than what we can see from the surface of the Earth. And their target, their plan was to land and to recover some samples from the surface and bring them back to Earth. And their target is the a crater called Apollo that has a lot of features in it named after like Apollo astronauts. And that's within the South Pole Aitken Basin crater, which is the largest, oldest crater on the moon. It's like 1,600 miles in diameter, and it goes down to about 5 miles deep. And the interesting thing about this is in 1600, that's like from the top of North Dakota down to South Texas.
Wow. That's huge.
That's huge. Yeah. And it was formed about 4.2 billion years ago or so. So very early in the moon's history. And this is such a big impact that it carved through probably the crust of the moon and into the mantle. And so some of the material that came up to the surface is probably mantle material, which is, you know, which would really tell us something about what was going on in the interior of the moon, you know, as it was very early in its history. And so that could feed us into things like, well, you know, where did the lava stuff from that formed Mari and other parts of the moon? It's very fundamental type data. So they land here on June 1st, and it has a lander with a little drill and scoop on it for picking up the samples, and had a little tiny rover with the camera on it. To take pictures, and also it had a little spectrometer, near-infrared spectrometer, so it could help determine what the surface composition and of the minerals in the area are. And then it had a little ascender vehicle. So they collected the samples, they put it in the ascender vehicle, and then on the I think it was the 4th of June, they launched that back up into space. And now let me back up a little bit. Chang'e 6 consists of an orbiter and a lander. So the orbiter is still orbiting. The lander went down, landed. Now it's got this little ascender rocket that's gone back up, and it reconnected with the orbiter, we haven't done that.
No.
that's quite an accomplishment. And then they transferred the samples from that ascent vehicle into the orbiter and then departed, because then the orbiter, what they put it into is a small capsule that the orbiter leaves. It's waiting to get in the right position now to then transfer back to Earth orbit. And then after a few days, around the end of the month, or the 25th or so, it's going to kick off that descent vehicle, which will parachute back. You know, it's going to bounce off the atmosphere once and then land, you know, in, I think, Mongolia. parachute down. And it'll be bringing back about 2 kilograms of material, which should be unique, you know, and tell us unique stuff about the history of the moon. And there, that compares to, I think, about a tenth of a pound from Osiris Rex, you know, as an example. So it'll be a very rich, you know, scientific return. But just from the technical aspect of what they did, you know, sending an orbiter and lander, which is what we did in Apollo, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is much smaller, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also why our Mars sample return program kind of has gone belly up, you know, for the time being, is because we didn't have the whole thing figured out. We had, let's go down and pick up samples off the surface without a plan in place on how we're going to get those samples back up to Mars orbit and then return to Earth.
Yeah.
You know, there are design considerations that flow from one end to the other. And so, you know, you can't do things backwards. So, but this is a remarkable feat by the Chinese, and they've been doing all of their Chang'an missions have been extremely successful, and I visit over there with I've visited the people that have, you know, put this stuff together, and a bunch of young you know, engineers in their 30s and stuff, and they're very excited. It's kind of like the U.S. in the 60s.
Wow.
The Apollo program.
Do they have their designs on putting some human beings on the moon?
Yes, they do. Mm. And it'll be probably in the 30s and when they actually do it. But they're not doing it just for, of course, they want to make a point about the you know, quality of their technology and all that kind of stuff. But I expect, because I've had chats with them about this too, that when they go, they'll be going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be going to stop down, come mm-hmm. back, and smoke a cigarette and say, hey, how was that?
Yeah.
So, I would hope that they would. I hope that they don't make the mistake that we did with the Apollo program, which was just to go there to run around the surface and,
mm-hmm.
yeah, do some great science, but... You know, when I was growing up back in the 60s, we were all told it was the dawn of the space age and we'd be living and working out in space, and the moon was just the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And there was never a plan to realize that stuff. So I'm thinking that the Chinese are taking a very systematic approach to the technical issues here, that they're building on their experience, you know, from one mission to the next, and where it's not a one-off, you know, rather it's they're expanding their capabilities, and it's capabilities that they plan to maintain.
It sounds like they have a lot of young people and a lot of energy that's around this program.
Oh, they really do. It was it was fun talking with them over at the kind of China's JPL over in Beijing. And they're building a big building that's their moon building. They're building another building that there's Mars, their Mars building. And, you know, and I met some of the people that designed the missions. And then, like I said, the young engineers that are putting it all together. And they have a lot to be proud about. So I give them kudos. So, and I wish that we would get rid of the, if I may be a little political, get rid of the Wolf Amendment, which prevents us from using NASA funds to engage in bilateral work with China, because you know, there's a lot of good people over there that where we could mutually benefit from that. And if you want to look at China as an enemy, just think of Godfather 2. Keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. But
good advice.
But they're good people to work with, and they're you know, of course, these engineers are not political. They're just trying to do their you know, their missions and stuff. And,
okay.
So
sounds good, Dr. Mark Sykes. Always a pleasure from the Planetary Science Institute. The website is psi.edu. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Dr. Mark Sykes and John on the other side of the glass. All of us wishing everyone a wonderful afternoon.